Okay, apologies in advance if I keep slowing down to take my glasses off and put them on again. My ordinary glasses are broken, therefore I've got to keep switching from looking around and reading, unfortunately. Sorry. Okay, now I begin by saying what a wonderful program this is and what a great contribution it's made to Jewish life in this area, and wish it to make chayav lo chayav. How come there's no Masechta Chanukah? We've got a Masechta Megillah, we've got Pesachim, we've got Sukkah, we've got Rosh Hashanah, we've got Yuma. How come there is no substantial Talmudic discussion of Inyanei Chanukah, apart from a couple of pages in Gemara Shabbos? We find in the popular Sefer Tanan in Hogim the following. Tam Sheneis Chanukah lo Niska Klal B'Mishnah. You've got this in item 2. The reason why the Neis of Chanukah is not mentioned at all in the Mishnah, untrue, it's mentioned 6 times. Lefisha Rabbeinu Mesadeh HaMishnah, because Rabbeinu HaKadosh, the Mesadeh HaMishnah, Hayom Yizera David HaMelech Olav HaShalom. He came from the family of David HaMelech. The Neis Chanukah Nasel Yidei Bais Beis Chashmonoim. And the Neis Chanukah was the result of the family of the Chashmonoim, who were Kohenim. Shetofsu HaMelucha, who chapped the Melucha. And they were not from the Zera of David. This displeased Rabbeinu HaKadosh. And when he came to write down the Mishnah, he left it out. It was excluded. So it was a petty act of revenge. He didn't like the Chashmonaim because they had illegitimately removed the Melucha from Zera David. And as an act of disparagement, he didn't speak much about Chanukah in his famous work, The Mishnah. Thus the Tanan in Hogim, who sources it to a statement of the Chasam Sofer. Now if the Chasam Sofer were to have said this, that would be big news. Big news. Chasam Sofer is well within the mainstream of 18th, 19th century rabbinic tradition, and for him to have said that would have been really serious news. He never said it. It's not written in any of his works. It's not brought down in any of his by any of his Talmudim. There is a statement of a Chasam Sofer in Gittin about the fact that there isn't much material about Chanukah. He doesn't say what the Tanan in Hogim quoted him as having said, and therefore it's not so. The Tanan in Hogim would have been better to have traced it to a Ramban, and you've got the Ramban in front of you on the page. The Ramban is in 2 places, and the first place is the main one. It's in Bereishis. Top of the page, and this was the punishment of the Chashmonaim, Shemalchu beBayis Sheni, who reigned during Bayis Sheni. Ki hayu chasidei elyon, they were tremendous chasidim. The ilmalehem nishtachu atayr v'hamitzvos miYisrael. Had it not been for them, the Torah would have been forgotten and the mitzvahs lost from Klal Yisrael. The afal pichein, nevertheless, nenshu, they were punished. Einish gado. Because the sons of the Chashmonaim dynasty all died by the sword, and we ended up with nobody left from the Chashmonaim, to the extent that the Gemara says about the Chashmonaim, anybody who claims to be a Hasmonai in these days is a slave, because they ended up being distributed around the Roman Empire as slaves. Shenichrusu kulam ba'avain hazeh, and they were punished for this. The afal pi shahayu mizera Shimon einesh min hatzedukim, even though there were other reasons why they could have been punished, namely that Shimon was associated with the tzedukim. Nevertheless, this wasn't the punishment. Avol kol zera matisyo chashmonoi hatzadik lo avru ele ba'avur zeh shemolchu v'lo hayu mizera Yehuda mibeis David. Because they removed the Melucha from Beis David, the Pasuk in Vayechi, you're not allowed to take away the scepter from Yehuda. Because their servants became their masters. Just as they removed the masters from Klal Yisrael, the Zera David, the Beis Yehuda, and they became the masters, which was illegitimate. It wasn't right what they did. Then the Ramban adds a second factor, that in addition to removing the scepter from Beis Dovid, they would come on him, and there's a special issa on a Kohen to act in any way as a secular authority. The Kohen should remain in the Beis HaMikdash and shouldn't be messing around with being a king, with generals, with politics, with all this kind of stuff. The Ramban brings the Yerushalmi, the Masechta Surius, Ein Moshkim Melochim Kohanim, you're not allowed to make a Kohen a Melech. Omer of Yehuda Antoroi, that's his name, Al Shein Lo Yosu Shevet Mi Yehuda, because of this posuk of Lo Shevet Mi Yehuda. Omer of Yichayu Ba'avon, the man Yorich Yomim, Al Mamlochto Hu Bono Bekeri Yisrael, another posuk, Mark Zid Basrei, Lo Yeh Kohanim Halavim, Hine Shonu Bekan She'ein Moshim Melochim Min HaKohen. So we have a special posuk that the Kohanim are not allowed to become kings. So had the Tamiyam in Hogim wanted to say that the reason why the Mishnah downplays the family of the Hashmonaim from the story of Hanukkah, in other words, that the Hanukkah is almost not mentioned in Torah Sheba'al Peh, the reason would better have been because the Hashmonaim were illegitimate monarchy. They had no right to be where they were, and therefore it was right that Torah Sheba'al Peh should, as it were, flag this disapproval and not have any mention of Nes Hanukkah. That's the argument for the Talmid and Hagim at this stage. Now what about the Rambam? The Rambam, of course, is always very important on these matters, and the Rambam in Hilchos Hanukkah states the history of the Nes of Hanukkah. It's very interesting, we compare the Rambam in the opening of Hilchos Hanukkah and the Rambam in the opening of Hilchos Purim. You see very, very differential position. In the opening of Hilchos Purim, the Rambam tells you what the dinim of Megillah are, who has to read it, when you have to read it, what you have to do. At the opening of Hilchos Hanukkah, the Rambam tells you the history. The Bayi Sheni, this, that, and the other, with the Hashmonaim, and they reigned for 200 years after the miracles. Okay? Everybody's interested in which miracle he upplays and which miracle he downplays. Is he upplaying the miracle of the mace, of the oil, or is he downplaying the miracle of the oil and upplaying the miracle of the victory? That's already a machlokes ala nisim haneiros halola. That's not really the issue over here. The point is, at the beginning of Hilchos Hanukkah, the Rambam tells you the history of what happened. And he doesn't tell you the history of what happened in Purim. I saw in the Harei Kedem, which is an analysis by the Kol Shulchan of Israel, of the works of Rav Soloveitchik, he said that the reason is very clear. Because in Torah Shebichsav, we have Purim. Purim exists in Torah Shebichsav. We've got Megillat Esther. In Hanukkah, we don't have anything in Torah Shebichsav, that we have to have something in Torah Sheba'al Peh. Since the Rambam believed that his Sefer, the Mishnah Torah, as he claims so controversially in his introduction, he claims that his Sefer, the Mishnah Torah, can become an official summary of Torah Sheba'al Peh, he has to include in his summary everything that's of importance in Torah Sheba'al Peh. And since there is no proper discussion in Torah Shebichsav, and there isn't a Mishnah or a Sugya which he can bring the history properly in Torah Sheba'al Peh, he's got therefore to include it. Therefore, right at the opening of Hilchos Hanukkah, he tells you the story of Hanukkah, which he doesn't need to do in Hilchos Megillah in Purim. Now, is the Rambam going to criticize the Hashmonaim as the Rambam did, 100 and something years later? He doesn't do it at all. In Hilchos Hanukkah, he tells you what the dinim are, he tells you the history, and he gives praise to the Hashmonaim. Later on, in Hilchos Melachim, he tells you who's a king and who's not a king, and he doesn't bring this point about a Kohen not allowed to be a king, but he does bring who's a king and not a king. You have it on page 2. Novi Shehemid Melech Mishar Shifei Yisrael, it's in Halacha Ches on page 2. A Novi who starts to be a king, V'hoya Oysa HaMelech Hoylech B'derech HaTorah V'hamitzvos V'nilcham Milchamet Hashem, if such a Novi were to wage the wars of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Harei Zeh Melech Mikol Mitzvos HaMalkus Nahag Yisrael, he can become a king. Even though the main Malchus must come out of David, because the Rambam brings the proper tradition about how the Zera David is meant to go down to the kings, nevertheless, if somebody else from base David becomes a king and operates properly within the system, he doesn't lose his position as a king, and he's a proper king. So the Ramban has not paskin the halacha properly all the way down the line about somebody being from Beis Dovid having to be there, and there isn't therefore the same strength of Issa, the same strength of disapproval from the Ramban about the Hashmonaim. One further point on this Ramban versus Ramban. Had the Ramban really wished to point out that Hanukkah is in some way an illegitimate yontav, the Hashmonaim messed up in some way by not only succeeding as they did, but taking the monarchy, as it were, in inverted commas, illegitimately, he would not have written what he writes in the opening of the Halosachah, where he writes very, very strongly that Aaron HaKohen, who felt somewhat slighted by his treatment during the time of the original Chanukah HaMizbeach, he was rewarded by the hint given in the Torah, in Bahalosachah, the current laning, the hint given over there that the future Chanukah HaMizbeach would be linked to Chanukah, that wonderful Yontav. Therefore the Ramban doesn't appear to be downplaying Chanukah at all. He may be criticising the Hashmonaim, but he's not downplaying Chanukah. See, therefore you can't really bring the Ramban as a reason why Chanukah has, as it were, been censored, has been removed from Torah Sheba'al Peh. So we're left still with the question. Remember the question. Why is there hardly any mention of Chanukah in Torah Sheba'al Peh? The reason offered by the Ta'amiyam in Hogim, which we're going to look at in a minute, namely that the Rabbeinu HaKadosh deliberately left it out, we're leaving the air for the moment. The proof that can be brought from the Ramban is at best an equivocal proof. And there is no real proof from the Ramban, who doesn't have either a smidgen of proof, namely that the Hashmonaim were an illegitimate monarchy, nor that there was anything so terrible in what they did, because there are many ways of becoming a king. Shaul HaMelech was a king, he was a lady, he wasn't Binyamin, he wasn't at all from Beis Yehuda, and we have others who were Mibeis Dovid. So we don't have a proof so far. Let's have a look now and to examine the actual claim that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi deliberately downplayed Hanukkah, and it was, as it were, Nishmat Mechibura. Not only have we seen this already, that this would be a really petty thing, consider the description given of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Yes, we're not talking about an ordinary person over here, we're talking about a very special person. Rabbeinu HaKadosh is described by the Rambam as follows. He was singular in his generation, was unique in his time, a man in whom all desirable conduct and all good traits were found. He merited to be called the Holy Master by his contemporaries. He was the epitome of wisdom and stature, piety and humility. In other words, he was the very, very acme, the very, very acme of what we mean when we speak about Chazal with a Ruach HaKodesh, which goes along with Chazal. How could Rabbeinu HaKodesh have done such a thing? How could he have deliberately taken an act of revenge? I'm from Beis Dovid. They weren't from Beis Dovid. They took the monarchy. I'm going to take my revenge. I'm not going to mention them in the Mishnah. That seems to be a very unfair thing. If the Chanukah Ness were really tainted, why would the grandfather of the grandfather of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, Hillel HaZokin, why would he have taken his part in fixing the Ness of Chanukah at all? Who fixed Chanukah as part of our canon? Yes, who was it? Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. The remnants of Anshei Knesset HaGadolah included Hillel HaZokin. They got no business to make a Yontav of Hanukkah if the Yontav is in itself tainted, if it's illegitimate. And this is Rabbeinu Yehuda himself. This is his own Mishpacha. Hillel HaZokin was the one. More, where do we find the characteristic mode of the Kiyum HaMitzvah of Neis Hanukkah? Beis Hillel Omrim. Yes, Malim B'Kodesh Be'im Maridim. It is Beis Hillel who give us our Mahadrin min HaMahadrin practice of Hanukkah. They would hardly have done that if the mitzvah of Hanukkah was somehow some kind of second rate, some kind of B'dievedika Yontov, a kind of B'dievedika mitzvah. He wouldn't have done that. The whole characteristic mode of Hanukkah comes out of the Hillel tradition, and the Hillel tradition is Rabbi Yehuda himself. How would they have done that? How would they have done that? Finally, it's not true that he left it out of the Mishnah. We have Hanukkah mentioned in 6 places in the Mishnah. We have it in Bikurim, we have it in Rosh Hashanah, we have it in Tainis, we have it in Megillah twice, and we have it in Bava Basra. That's apart from the Sugya, which we have in Kafalot in Shabbos. So it's not true to say it's been left out. What is true is that there is no Masechta. That's how I began this morning. There is no Masechta Chanukah. It hasn't been included properly with the full weight that we would have expected to find of a Yom Tov that lasts 8 days. We know we celebrate Chanukah like we celebrate Sukkot or Pesach or Shavuot. Why is there no proper Masechta of Chanukah? This remains on the table for us to have a look at in the next few minutes. Twentieth century authors have spent quite a lot of time on this problem, trying to give out some kind of answer, some kind of reasons for the limited mention of Chanukah in Torah Shabbat. There's even an essay by Rabbi Perlman down the road in his essays on the Yom Tov. He's got an essay on the subject, which also has been mentioned by others before. Rabbi Reuven Margolis, in his Yisod HaMishnah of Ari Chosov, okay, suggests that there's a historical reason why Chanukah has not been given the place in Torah Shabbat that we would have expected. Until the time of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the Roman rulers waged war not so much on the people, but on Torah. They waged an incessant war on Torah. After all, Rabbi Akiva himself was the last in a long line of martyrs. He was murdered, and the whole trend of the Roman rule had been to try and wipe out the leadership of Torah Shabbat Fair. They tried to abolish the Semicha, in the end they were successful, and they murdered the various leaders of Klal Yisrael, who were the leaders of Torah Shabbat Fair at the time, right up to the time of Rabbi Yehuda. When Rabbi Yehuda came on the scene, this was dying out. This policy of annihilation of the leaders of the rabbinic community of Klal Yisrael was a dying out policy. It was going to be changed, whatever the reason. And Rabbi Yehuda, as you know, struck up an alliance with Antoninus, who was the Roman designate over there. And he had to play very soft. This is not my theory. This is Reuven Margolis' theory in the work I just mentioned. And he says that Rabbi Yehuda felt it necessary to downplay the contribution of Chanukah. Why was it necessary to downplay the contribution of Chanukah? Because Chanukah would have been a stick in their eyes. What happened on Chanukah? Torah Shabbat Peh was revitalized through the Nes of Chanukah. The rabbinic leadership at the time, the Beit Hashmonaim, the Gedolei Hador, had won a remarkable victory against their then oppressors, and it would have been a big stick in their face to say, look, this is what we won a few hundred years ago, and we're going to celebrate a big Yom Tov, we're going to put our candles in the window, we're going to make a big fuss about this, as though to say, yes, we're still alive and well. Teras Yisrael Chai. And this would have been something which would have been impolitic to do. Therefore, says Rav Reuven Margolis, since the policy of the Romans had softened towards the Jewish leadership in Eretz Yisrael, it would not have been a good idea, it certainly wouldn't have been popular by the Romans, for him to have brought out in his Mishnah a whole theory of Chanukah with the whole history and all the dinim in full force, like you've got in Pesachim, like you've got in Rosh Hashanah. Wouldn't have been a good idea. We're going to keep it a bit quiet. It's going to be held under wraps. Thus Reuven Margolis in his work. Similarly, we find the Eglei Tal, not the Eglei Tal that we've all come across, a different Eglei Tal. He writes also about this, if I can just find the source. The Emperor Hadrian, after subduing the rebels at Beitar, lashed out like fire in anger at all of Klal Yisrael, putting an end to all the Yomim Tovim, the Rosh Chodesh and Shabbos. We know about that. The reign of the next emperor, Antoninus, who is Rebbe's contemporary, could almost be turned soft, comfortable. This is a parallel theory to the one I've just given you. The previous ban on Chanukah, however, remained in effect. In other words, he puts the onus for this on the Romans and not on the Jews. Even a nice ruler, a benevolent ruler, would not allow a Yom Tov of such national feeling to a people who had only recently fought to the death. This was after Bar Kokhba, this was after Beitar, and had at great cost to Rome been contained. In other words, this came after the pressure of Rome on the community of Yerushalayim had only recently been lifted. For this reason, Rabbeinu Kaddish could not, Rabbeinu HaKaddish could not possibly have mentioned Hanukkah. In other words, he also kept it quiet. The reason is slightly different, but not very different from the one we've already seen. Offer number two. This is really alternative number two to why Hanukkah has not been properly mentioned in Torah Shabbat. Everybody knew about it. It's a well-known fact. The Rabbeinu HaKaddish in the Mishnah is only going to mention things which are debatable and things which are contentious. Things which are less mandapolig. There is no proper dispute about it. There's nothing to say and not going to be mentioned. Therefore, there is no Masechta Mezuzah, there is no Masechta Tefillin. Okay? These are things which are, as it were, taken for granted. There is nothing really to talk about. Masha Einkein, for example, Lamates Malachas, where there's an enormous amount of controversial material, the Torah Shabbat material on Lamates Malachas had been controversial, not everybody agreed. Is this activity this malacha, that malacha? What's the relationship between an av and a tolda? When are you chayv chatas? When are you chayv skila? When are you chayv all the various yisurim of the Torah? Only when it's this, that, or the other way. And there was controversy about this. Not so in the case of Hanukkah. It was simple stuff. Everybody knew about it. Not so in the case of Tefillin. Everybody knew about Tefillin. There was little controversy about it. Now, I'm not sure if this is entirely a true theory, but it's a theory which has been put forward to explain why these Masechtas are not found in full bloom like we find with Purim and Pesach and Rosh Hashanah. Not sure how true it is, because if you think about it, even on the inside of Tefillin, you've got controversies, and even in Hanukkah itself, as we've seen already, you've got Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai. You've got the three stages of the observance of the mitzvah. So it's not entirely true that there's no controversy about it, and it was entirely settled. But nevertheless, the argument's been put forward that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi only wanted to write down, quotation marks, what he needed to write down. He was reluctant to write down Torah Shabbat Peh anyway, for reasons which are well known to all of us. And therefore he only got to write down those things which he felt were needed to be put down for future generations, lest controversy reassert itself. That's the argument put over here. Now, you find a tangential point to this. I already mentioned some of the other Masechtas which could have been included, and they weren't written as part of Shas, Tefillin, Mezuzah, etc. And you find in the writings of the son of the Vilna Gaon an amazing statement. He said his father had not only the Masechtas of Shas that we all know about, he had a number of other Masechtas which had come down to him, and there's a trace in the Gaonim about this, that there were Masechtas around which haven't come down to us. There were Masechtas, there was a Masechta Tanis, the Masechta Megillah, and there was something called Hanukkah, Masechta Hanukkah. And the son of the Gaon says his father had scrolls which represented these Masechtas. So maybe it's not true that the Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi didn't include it in Torah Shabbat Peh, because it was already there in these, as it were, primeval Masechtas which had come down in some form as part of the original Torah Shabbat Peh which had been written down. That's the suggestion made over here by the son of it, by the son of the Gaon. At any rate, if that would be so, then that would cause it to bring right back into question what I said before. Why does the Rambam quote the history of Hanukkah? So it must be that whatever the Rambam had, he didn't have these stuff. Because had he had this, and it was officially part of the Torah Shabbat Peh, he wouldn't have needed to include the history of Hanukkah as he needed to include the history of Purim. So it could be that this material came down selectively. Some communities had it, and some communities didn't have it. At any rate, that's the suggestion offered by the son of the Gaon, that his father had this fantastic material which nobody else seems to have had. Sorry? Well, we certainly don't have it. We certainly don't have it, but he must have had some residual, could have been fragments he had. He may not have had the actual scrolls, but he may have had residual fragments. And we do find, as I say, in Rabbi Gaon, I think it is, he refers to a Masechta Hanukkah. Okay, so there was something knocking around, but we don't know whether it was part of the original Torah Shabbat Peh which was written down, or it was some kind of second or third stage. Could well be. I don't know. Let's have a look over here at the last thing. Think about the following. Not one law of Hanukkah is mentioned in the Mishnah. We've already said there are references to Hanukkah in the Mishnah, but not one law of Hanukkah is mentioned in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is a summary of legal material. And we know, we've got the whole Purim. But since the laws of Hanukkah are written in the ninth chapter of Megillas Tanis, now Megillas Tanis, this goes back to our earlier discussion, was that this kind of semi-mesecta, which was a removed from Torah, which was removed from the canon as we now have it, because it was not considered to be viable anymore. The various Tanaisim that they kept over there, we no longer observe. But this Megillas Tanis, as it was known, contained Hanukkah material. And when they abolished the Tanaisim involved over there, they seem to have scrubbed out this scroll, or this Megillah, from the canon. And that's why we don't have the laws of Hanukkah in our Mishnah, because they already pre-existed in this Megillas Tanis, and that could be what the son of the Gaon was referring to. It was therefore unnecessary for Rebbe to re-include them in the Mishnah, since Megillas Tanis was considered very prestigious, almost as prestigious as Torah Shebichtav, with its authority, as it were, surpassing that of the Mishnah. But unfortunately, as we saw, it got left out later on. I just want to add one final thing before we finish. This theory I came across only quite recently, therefore I didn't include it on the sheet which you have. Since Hanukkah celebrates Torah Shebaal Peh, Purim can't celebrate Torah Shebaal Peh. Purim and Hanukkah are very much parallel. Purim is a Yom Tov which is part of Torah Shebichtav. Megillas Esther is part of Tanakh. Therefore, in the two sides of Torah that we all know and love so much, Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh, Purim represents Torah Shebichtav. Megillas Esther is a part of Torah Shebichtav. In that case, Hanukkah must represent Torah Shebaal Peh. What's the characteristic mode of Torah Shebaal Peh? Does it not be written down? The characteristic mode of Torah Shebaal Peh is that it be oral. You're not allowed to write it down. Rebbe was making a concession, Eis La'aseh Hashem, in order to write down Torah Shebaal Peh, that he wanted to retain something authentic about Torah Shebaal Peh. So what did he do? He flagged us up. I'm going to write down Torah Shebaal Peh, quotation marks, unfortunately. We need to do it. But I'm not going to write down everything of Torah Shebaal Peh. I'm going to leave one yontov. I'm going to leave one place, as it were, sacrosanct. I'm not going to write down the Torah Shebaal Peh of Hanukkah. Why? Because Hanukkah represents Torah Shebaal Peh. There is no sefer in Tanakh. The whole of the tradition of Hanukkah that we have is essentially an oral tradition. It got written down, it didn't get written down, as we've already asked. But I'm not going to write it down officially in my Mishnah, because my Mishnah, I want to retain some of the flavour of Torah Shebaal Peh, and therefore I'm going to leave one area, one space, like people who go away for Yom Tov, for Pesach, and they do one room for Dikas Chometz, to be a zecher the mitzvah of the Dikas Chometz. I'm going to retain one place in Torah Shebaal Peh where there is no written mention almost at all, and that's going to be the Yom Tov of Hanukkah. The Yom Tov of Hanukkah is going to be very, very special. It's going to be something we all learn. We all learn about it, we all keep it, it's all going to be done for Tachlit Ahidur, but it's not going to be written down officially in the same way as every other part of Torah Shebaal Peh. It's going to retain it in its own corner as a proper representative of the authentic Torah Shebaal Peh, which was properly never to have been written down. Wish you all of the challenge.